This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome back to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. In the studio is Sharmila Ganesan and Lim Soo Ann. Now, earlier on this afternoon, we spoke to you about the rights of sanitation workers because it is World Toilet Day today. We're going to be moving on to our second story now. But before that, we do have a question for you on social media.
So we are asking you, who is your favourite Sesame Street character? So on our poll on Twitter, 43% of you say that it's Cookie Monster. 35% of you say it's Elmo, 13% of you say it's Big Bird, and 10% of you say it's other characters. And I think we'll get to the
visit those characters later.
Yes, absolutely. So you can tell us, you can take that poll. You can also tweet us who your favorite characters are at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, or you can also call us at 0377-332-900.
So here's a little exercise for you. You know, just close your eyes. Imagine you're a school going child again. You get home, you fling your bag into a corner, you careen past ensuing scolding, you change out of your uniform, you wolf down lunch and you race through your homework. And why are you doing that? Because the goal is to finish before you hear this. Dare you not to sing along to that.
I'm bopping along as it is.
So how did listening to that theme song make you feel, Sharmila?
It actually brought back exactly what you just described. Me running home every day at my grandparents' house usually because I wanted to watch Sesame Street.
Mm. So Anne, were you a fan of Sesame Street as well?
I think I was more of a casual fan. It wasn't one of those series that I religiously watched as a kid. And maybe I did watch it more when I was younger. But I do remember, you know, fun times watching Sesame Street. I do have characters that I like. And, yeah. But perhaps just not as attached as maybe you or Sharmila.
Well, there are plenty of people around the world who are attached to the show. In fact, Sesame Street has just celebrated its 50th anniversary. That's right. That's 50 years of Big Bird, Oscar the Grouch, Cookie Monster, the Count, Bert and Ernie and a whole host of other characters were such an iconic part of my growing up experience and, of course, countless other children around the world.
Not that I'm feeling old or anything at all. But the idea for Sesame Street was conceived actually at a little dinner party at the end of 1966. Television producer Joan Ganz Cooney was having a few friends around when one of them posed this question. Lloyd Morissette, he was an experimental psychologist who for a while had been mulling over the same question that he asked at the gathering. And that question was, do you think television can be used to teach young children?
But if you go by the account of the current executive producer of Sesame Street, Ben Lemon, he says that Joan Ganz Cooney was observing some children singing along to a TV commercial jingle for an alcoholic beverage. So this was in the 60s.
I was like, wait, what?
So, and that was when she asked herself, can we use television to teach something important?
I believe that executive producer that you mentioned, Ben Lehman, I think I remember reading an article. I think he was 2 years old when Sesame Street first came out. So he was a fan of the show as well. So that was, of course, back in 1966. But for the next 3 years, Joan Ganz Cooney laid the foundation for the Children's Television Workshop, which was the production company that would ultimately be responsible for the program. She traveled all over the United States of America and Canada. She interviewed experts in child development, education, and television. And then she ended up reporting her findings in a 55-page document entitled The Potential Uses of Television in Preschool Education. And then she raised funding, something like $8 or $9 million for the pre-production, along with her collaborator, Lloyd Morissette, who was at that fateful dinner party that that you mentioned earlier.
So despite all the serious legwork that she put into the project, Joan Ganz Cooney was not the first choice to helm the program. Some of the reasons given included her lack of high-level managerial experience, experience and leadership, untested financial management skills, and lack of experience when it came to children's television and education. Mm. Thankfully, she did end up putting her foot down and was finally named the Children's Television Workshop's executive director. Yeah. She was also one of the first female executives in American television, which in itself caused quite a ripple effect.
It wouldn't be the bigger picture if we didn't mention that.
There we go.
So when Sesame Street debuted on the 11th of November 1969, it was a children's program like no other. So by the end of its first season, the show had won 3 Emmys, a Peabody, and was featured on the cover of Time magazine. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Not bad for the first season,
right? I know.
So what made Sesame Street the runaway success that it was? Well, for a start, it really upended what was seen as the traditional model of children's programming, right? Children didn't necessarily learn lessons from adults. There was no kind of teacher at the front of the classroom. In many cases, children learned from other children, as well as a diverse cast of puppets.
But not just any puppets. Mm-hmm. They were Jim Henson's Muppets.
Correct.
So while the early Muppets were already appearing in short form TV programs from the mid 50s. Mm. It was really Sesame Street that made them a household name. You know, their introduction to the program was meant to be really carefully crafted. When educational psychologists were giving their input at the pre-production stage, they suggested to the show's producers that the human actors and Muppets shouldn't interact because it would confuse the children watching. Mm. But when the program was tested on children, they lost interest when it was only human actors on screen. So Jim Henson created Muppets like Big Bird and Oscar, who could interact with the human actors at the street level, where the best action tested.
Yeah.
And so in reading about the 50th anniversary of the show, what really got me was the way the producers consistently incorporated education elements into every single scene. Mm. So the character development, scene writing was completely evidence-based, with the show's researchers focused on achieving cognitive goals. So maintaining attention span was a major goal, along with building memory skills, problem-solving, and all these components were honed in onto one point, right, to prepare young children for school, but specifically children from low-income families who may grapple with feelings of low self-esteem. Mm. So it was meant to show children that all not just any children, but all children, right, that the challenges and issues they faced in life were universal.
I never knew all this when I was watching Sesame Street.
You know, I started researching this yesterday and I fell into a rabbit hole. Yes, I got distracted by some Cookie Monster videos. But by and large, the amount of research that went into Sesame Street, even before it was screened for the first time, was just mind-blowing. The two producers, the founders of the show were very clear that this had to be curriculum-based. Mm. They wanted to change the way children learned. And it was a time where the whole idea of learning from television was just seen as that newfangled thing. How could we possibly learn from television? And they really kind of turned the model on its head, right? So after the overwhelming success of the first season, the producers then moved on to teaching effective goals, which means teaching children to deal with their feelings and emotions. Mm. And this is where Sesame Street really, really came into its own. For the way they handled topics such as, you know, the acceptance of diversity, conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. I remember a great Robin Williams sketch where he goes through the how to understand the word conflict with a two-headed monster. Great video to look up. And they even covered heavier topics, right? Such as what happened when Big Bird struggled to understand why his friend Mr. Hooper was no longer around.
Say, where is he? I want to give it to him. I know. He's in the store.
A Big Bird? Hmm? He's not in there.
Oh. Then where is he?
Big Bird, don't you remember we told you? Mr. Hooper died. He's dead.
Oh, yeah. I remember. Well, I'll give it to him when he comes back.
Big Bird, Mr. Hooper's not coming back.
Why not?
Big Bird, when people die, they don't come back.
Ever?
No, never.
Why not?
Well, Big Bird, they're dead. They can't come back.
Well, he's gonna come back. Why, who's gonna take care of the store? And who's gonna make my birdseed milkshakes and tell me stories?
Big Bird, I'm gonna take care of the store. Mr. Hooper, he left it to me. And I'll make you your milkshakes and we'll all tell you stories and sure, we'll make sure you're okay.
Sure, we'll look after you.
Oh.
Deep breath. So I actually didn't play the continuation of this clip where Big Bird actually asks in such an angry tone of voice, why does it have to be this way? Give me one good reason. And he gets the answer, Big Bird, it has to be this way just because. Now, when that line was written in, the show's outside experts actually advised the head writer who wrote this episode that they should remove the line because they were concerned that having an open-ended explanation would not be enough for children, right? That it might confuse them. But the head writer, he kept the line in because to him it was an acknowledgement that there is never a good explanation about why people die.
Mm. And the episode actually ended up becoming one of the show's most powerful moments. And really, it was the first time that such a serious topic was discussed in a children's show. I mean, listening to it actually brought back memories of watching it. And I actually don't remember whether it screened when I was that young. I don't, but I know that I watched it. And it's huge because adults don't talk to you about these things. And it's such a simple way of understanding what I think is even for many adults to talk about to each other. And it did also pave the way for Sesame Street to continue tackling subjects that were previously considered too heavy for children to handle.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And large part of that that success of Sesame Street, right, that was tied to how well-crafted the characters are. Mm. So the adult actors were not teachers as such, while the child performers were not trained actors.
No, they weren't.
And apparently this caused quite a bit of spontaneity on set because they were not professional actors. But the producers were insistent that the show just roll with the improv situations that the kids brought to set. And then, of course, we have the Muppets themselves who need an entire The Daily Digest just for themselves.
We couldn't even agree on which Muppets to add to the to our list.
Poll. You're like, well, what about Oscar the Grouch? What about...
So it actually got me thinking about who my favourite Muppet character was. But before I answer that, and before I get your input as well, I asked writer and theatre maker Farah Abdul who her favourite Sesame Street character is.
Okay, I have to say my favorite character is Ernie because he's so much of everything. He's weird, he's awkward, he's silly, he's witty. You know, he's everything bundled up together. I think he's a very fun character.
Was Ernie the character that you identified with most?
Because I do think that I'm sometimes silly, sometimes smart, sometimes weird. So, yeah, which is why I love that character.
And do you remember for you if there was any seminal moments when it came to learning something through the show?
There were many strong moments in Sesame Street, but what I loved especially were the lessons of acceptance. That it was okay to be different or to look different, that everyone, no matter how different they are special in their own ways. And I think that's the strongest point that Sesame Street delivered for me personally.
And did your own children watch the show?
Oh gosh, I tried exposing my kids to Sesame Street, but sadly, they were more attracted to other shows like Banana in Pajamas, Teletubbies and other Disney shows. So, yeah.
So, you mentioned earlier on how diverse the characters in Sesame Street are. How do you think this impacts learning in children?
I think from earlier on, Sesame Street has focused on diversity. The characters were whites, blacks, and, you know, different characters like monsters and all. I think the biggest lesson that Sesame Street helped in among the children are to show the kids that this world doesn't consist of one kind of people. Mm-hmm. Instead, we are all different and we all have different things to offer. And that we do not have to conform to, you know, any one box to fit in, that we can still be ourselves and still be accepted. I mean, of course, Sesame Street, you know, there were a lot of lessons on alphabets, numbers, words and everything. But what I loved, really, really loved about Sesame Street, the lessons that were not just on numbers and alphabets and all that. It's the lessons about us humans and who we are.
So having said that, Fa, what lessons do you think we could learn from Sesame Street's success about creating content for Malaysian children?
The biggest success by Sesame Street, from my point of view, is that as a child, it made me believe that there is a street in this world called Sesame Street where everyone were wonderful and, you know, acceptive and loving, where you never feel alone. And I think that, you know, a content with that kind of message is truly, truly wonderful and precious for children, you know, TV in Malaysia or any other sorts of media for children in Malaysia, in a country where, you know, there's multiracials and everything. And these lessons on acceptance should be our focus as well.
So that was playwright Fa Abdul with her thoughts on the role Sesame Street played in our own childhood and what content lessons can be derived from its production. So we're asking you on Twitter who your favourite Sesame Street character is, and what are the results looking like, Suan?
Well, 42% of you say that you like Cookie Monster the most. 33% of you say Elmo's your favourite. 16% of you say you like Big Bird. And 9% of you say it's others. So we have some comments here. A couple of people, Miss Diamond and Jack Fu, say that it's Oscar.
Yeah, Oscar the Grouch for the win.
We also have a vote for Count by Imran.
Oh, go on, Suan. You know you want to do the laugh. No. Okay.
I will.
Oh, that's pretty good, Charmila.
I'm trying.
Also, Born to Rebel said that I really love them, especially the phonetics taught how my kids to learn the alphabet through Sesame Street. And that's all the comments we have for now. You can still tell us. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, yes, or you can WhatsApp 018-789-8899.
I'm going to go with the majority. Cookie Monster is my favourite, just because, you know, the ability to be able to yell, me want cookie, whenever I want, just, you know, that just rules.
Mine was Oscar, only because I even named my dog Oscar, actually.
Wow.
But although he is far from being a grouch, he was an overly friendly Labrador. But because, you know, he lived in a trash can. People used to make fun of him.
Right.
He was dirty, but he was resolutely grouchy and wouldn't change. I like that about him.
And, you know, I really like the fact that right from the get-go, right from the outset, the characters are really diverse. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know these days Sesame Street is really famous for the fact that it includes diverse characters. I think one of the Muppets is homeless. One of them has a mother who has an opioid dependency.
And then they introduced a character who was on the spectrum. So yes, they do try. But I also remember, I don't actually remember many of the human characters' names, but the one that sticks in my mind as a child was this woman named Maria.
Yes.
And she was a Latin American woman.
Yes.
And she stuck in my mind because she was actually one of the first instances of someone from a different culture in an American TV show that I remember.
And I remember that they used her character later on in subsequent seasons to, she had a baby. So to be able to introduce this idea of pregnancy and a new addition to the family. So that was really quite cool. What about you, Suan? Who's your favorite character?
I think I have to say Cookie Monster. I have to agree with the majority here.
Okay.
Just being able to say cookie.
I will say, though, that I have a special fondness for Bert and Ernie, and just that annoying, like, hey, Bert, hey, Bert. My sister and I used to do that to each other. We used to, like, poke each other when we were, like, sitting around going, hey, Bert. So quintessentially that those best friends or siblings, or, you know, some people say something more, two people living together and growing on each other and growing together. I love them.
One of the greatest appeals about Sesame Street for me growing up was vocabulary. Mm-hmm. I was somebody who was, because I played a lot of Scrabble growing up, this idea of learning new words was just terribly interesting to me. And the way they introduced the words, you know, they in later years they used many celebrity appearances.
Yes.
Not that I'm being biased, but please do look up the video of Cookie Monster learning the word resist alongside Sir Ian McKellen. Actually, in the clip, he introduces himself as saying, hello, I'm Ian McKellen. And Cookie Monster goes, hello, I'm Sir Cookie Monster.
And One of my favorite segments actually used to be the one of these things that is not like the other.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know why. I still remember, you know, even now, yes, like when I think of Sesame Street, that's one of the first things that come to mind.
I'm feeling slightly heady. I might do Grover's Near and Far by running around the studio if you don't stop me. So...
No one's going to stop you. Nobody's... We all want that to happen.
Okay. So please let us know if you have a particular favorite character that we haven't perhaps mentioned in our conversation thus far. You can continue to share your thoughts with us by tweeting us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. As always, we would absolutely love to hear from you. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for today's show. Do look us up out on BFM, The Bigger Picture, on Facebook to drop us a message. We're always interested in hearing from you if there are any stories that we could potentially cover for the Daily Digest as well. If you missed any part of this show, you can download the podcasts, bfm.my/thedailydigest, or from BFM app or from Spotify. Suanne and I are going to scoot off, but coming up at 3 p.m., Sharmila's sticking around because she's going to be speaking to Dyong Che Lien, who's a co-founder of Gardner and Wife Theatre, and Chu Li Sien, who's a coordinator of the children's programs at Ilham Gallery, about how to introduce children to the arts and, you know, some of the ways that this can be done effectively. And this is because it's a Universal Children's Day tomorrow.
That's right.
Very nice. Okay, so thank you for joining us, everybody. This has been the Daily Digest on BFM 89.9. We are going to be leaving you now with Willie Nelson, On the Street Where You Live.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.